Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shouted Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things KISS. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey, I'm Paul Stevenson, and this is episode 84 of Vintage Rock Pod, the ultimate classic rock podcast, with a new episode released every single day. You get an extended interview like this one every Monday, and in the last few weeks alone, we've had 3 Rock and Roll Hall of Famers on. Plus, you get short 4 or 5 minute daily episodes Tuesday through Sunday on a show that I call This Day Rocks. Loads of content for all you classic rock fans. Now, if this is your first time listening, then please find Vintage Rock Pod on your podcast app or player of choice and subscribe directly on there so you don't miss a single episode. As I said, one comes out every day and you can only get all those episodes on the Vintage Rock Pod feed. So give it a like or a subscribe on there, please. Also, check out the YouTube channel too, Vintage Rock Pod, where you can see all the wonderful guests that I've interviewed over the years. Loads of little videos on there, which will keep you amused for hours. Honestly, just search for Vintage Rock Pod on YouTube. Now, today's interview is a man who's been in the business since he was, well, knee-high to a grasshopper, as we'd say in the UK. He was just a boy when he was performing in bands with his father. His journey has taken him through the session world and into a big British group from Manchester who scored a number 3 hit in 1979 and a couple of songs that hit the Billboard Hot 100 as well. He's worked on mega movies like Gladiator, created music for leading video games, and hosts his own interview show where he grills the stars as well. I'm talking about the wonderful Des Tong from Sad Cafe. Now, Sad Cafe featured the vocal talent of the wonderful Paul Young. And I have to do this thing now, it's kind of statutory, where you say, no, not the Paul Young who sang Everywhere I Lay My Hat or Come Back and Stay. I'm talking about the Paul Young who went on to be lead singer of Mike and the Mechanics with Genesis star Mike Rutherford and the brilliant Paul Carrack alongside them. Now, this group are best known for their big hit, Everyday Hurts, but they did have success in North America with the hits Run Home Girl and La-Di-Da, while their album Facades went top 10 in 1980. So, in this interview now, you're going to hear about an offer that Des got from Gladys Knight, playing house parties with famous footballers in attendance, the awkward situation that led to him joining Sad Cafe, and Sad Cafe's plans for 2023 with, dare I say it, new music in the offing. So, I hope you enjoy this fun chat with Sad Cafe's Des Tong. Now, your music education began at a very early age, didn't it? Your dad got you into playing the bass when you were really young.
Yeah. Yeah, well, my dad was a pianist, and he was a fabulous pianist. He used to play places like the Hotel Piccadilly in Manchester and all things like that. And every young kid wants to bang things, so obviously, you know, Dad, I want to play the drums. And he went, no, you don't. So he had a friend who was a double bass player, and he owned a carpet factory. And what he used to do was, the underfelt for the stair carpet, he used to store it on the neck of this old double bass he had, which was on its side, and then you could sort of reel it out from it. And my dad said, well, I'll give you a fiver for it. And he went, yeah, okay. So my dad brought this double bass home for me. We had to fix it. It had a crack in it, so we had to fix it. And that was my first introduction. My dad loved jazz and Oscar Peterson Trio, and Ray Brown was the bass player, one of the greats. And so he was, early on, he was one of my first heroes. And I've still got his double bass method, his tutor, which is incredible. And so at the age of about 12, I was playing in hotels and little clubs with my dad in his trio.
Incredible. That's a phenomenal start. And only just a few years later, when you're a teenager, you're in another band. And I heard a story once. There was a famous bookmaker in the area who loved you guys and used to book you to play at his house at parties and things like that. And there was some kind of celebrities there, shall we say, like to George Best. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, the guy was called Gus Demme. Demme's bookmakers in Manchester were huge. You know, they were everywhere.
Yeah.
And the band I was in, this Henderson Chambers, we used to play all sort of all places. We did little clubs, but we also did house parties, which became very lucrative, I have to say. And Gus Demme was at one of these parties one night, and he said, "Oh, you got to come round and play at my place." So, and they never usually started till about 2 o'clock in the morning, and we turned up, and this place was absolutely jumping. And you know, and yeah, they were all there. George Best was there, and various footballers, and. I think I was about 18. Very year, very
cool. Not bad. Yeah, definitely, yeah. Absolutely. And another cool story I heard once was when you were playing at a very cool Ronnie Scott's club, and the fabulous Gladys Knight made a comment about wanting to take you back to the States.
Oh, yeah. We were working with a lady called Mona Richardson, and she used to be in the Johnny Otis show. She was lovely, and we did a little tour with her around the UK, and we ended up at Ronnie Scott's. I'm doing a week. The main act was Elvin Jones, big jazz player. But we went on stage, and it was great, and we came off, and somebody said, "Oh, there's some guests over in the bar would like to say hello." And we went over, and Gladys Knight and the Pips were standing there. And she just said, "Oh, I love your playing, man. I'd love to take you back to America." And it was, "Oh, okay. Not sure about that." But yeah. So who knows? Wow. I might not have been sitting here if I'd have taken the offer up.
Indeed, yeah. Indeed. But the reason you are sitting here is because of a sad cafe. Now, you joined the band when John Stimson decided to call it a day with the group, didn't he? Now, at this point, the band already had some big hits, a top 10 album. So how did it come about that you were asked to join with them then?
Well, I'd been, at the time, I was a session player in Manchester. And I used to regularly bump into Paul Young, Ian Wilson, Vic Emerson, because they did sessions as well as being in the band. And I'd known Paul for a few years. And he rang me one day, and I think I was at somewhere like Granada, and he rang me and he said, could you drop round the house on your way home? He used to call me Desley. Don't know why, but that was his nickname for me. And he said, "I've got something. I just want you to play on something for me." So I went round to his house, had a little amp, and he played me this song. And so I put a bass line on it. And he said, "Oh, I love it. I love it. What are you doing tonight?" So I said, "Well, I was going home." And he said, "Right. Can you drop into Strawberry Studios and put the bass line down on it?" So I said, "Yeah, okay." And I assumed it was one of his little projects because I'd done a few for him before. So I turned up at Strawberry, walked into the studio, and the band were all sitting there. So I thought, "Oh, hello, what's this about?" And they just said, "No, we just want you to play on the track for us." So I played on the track and they all loved it. And they said, "Oh, what are you doing tomorrow night? Can you come back again?" So I said, "Yeah," thinking, nice session, you know, good bit of money here. Mm-hmm. And the next night I turned up and John was sitting there, John Stimson. And I said, it was like a little bit embarrassing, but he said, no. He said, "Don't worry about it." He said, "Look, I'm stepping back from playing. I'm going to get into the management side of it. And Paul wants you in the band. So do you fancy doing the rest of the album?" And I said, "Yes, of course." and so I did the rest of the album. And then at the end, he came up and he said, "And I'm not going to be doing any live playing. So do you want to do the tour?" Which was the Olay tour in 1981. So I said, "Yeah, fantastic." Obviously, you know, not really looking too far into the future because it, as far as I was concerned, this was just a well-paid session. But as it turned out, I mean, I'd been in loads and loads of bands, played loads and loads of gigs, but the culture shock of walking on stage the first night, and I think it was a Guild Hall in Preston, to this massive audience. And suddenly I was no longer a sideman. You know, all the gigs I'd done before, I was just a face in a band. I was a sideman. Suddenly, I'm Des Tong from Sad Cafe. And that was a bit of a head shock, I tell you, because, wow, I didn't quite realize what it was going to entail. And about three gigs into the tour, Paul came in and he had the tour manager with him, and he gave him some money, and he said, take him out, buy him some rock and roll clothes, because I'd been wearing a cool suit up to this point. Buy him some rock and roll clothes, and he turned around and he said, and shave that beard off. Oh, and so that was me in Sad Cafe, and that was like 1981, and I'm still here.
Indeed, yeah, 40 plus years later. So you've mentioned that the audiences and things like that on stage, but what was it like being part of a band that were obviously well known across the UK, the huge hit, obviously everyone knows Everyday Hurts, all that sort of stuff. What was it like kind of being part of a group as big as that?
It was amazing. Absolutely amazing. The fans are incredible. Mm-hmm. They still are. I mean, we've just done three gigs. One was in Milton Keynes, a place called The Stables, which is a fabulous venue. It's owned by the Johnny Dankworth Foundation. And then we went up to North Yorkshire. We did a gig in Whitby, and then down to Lincolnshire, a big gig in Louth. Now, the people there, they're coming up to us. There was a guy and his wife, and they said, we met in 1981 at the Manchester Apollo on the Olay tour, and they had a scrapbook with all photographs of me. Oh, wow. I was like a child. But they said, you know, we've followed you ever since. And it was the same wherever we went. You know, people were coming up to us, because we always make a point of going out afterwards and saying hello. Yeah. And they were all coming up and they were saying, like, this is incredible. We've missed you so much, you know, because we go right back. And some of them, obviously, earlier than when I joined, but they have that affinity. It's like a big family, you know. And it's not like they own you, but they're almost part of you.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, and it's lovely. It really is nice to meet these people again after all these years. We played last year a little gig in Barnoldswick, in Lancashire. Which is actually Barwick to the locals. And I'd had a message on our Facebook page from this guy, and he said, and this was a similar thing. We met on your 1981 tour. Could we get you to sign an album for us, and could we say hello? And I went, of course you can, you know. So they turned up and they'd got all these various things for us to sign. And they sat at the front of the stage. It was only a tiny little venue, but they sat there and they sang every word to every song. And they knew the words better than we did. Amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Absolutely. The fans are incredible.
Absolutely, absolutely. And in terms of that period then, because you were with the band for about 10 years originally, weren't you, before Paul left?
Yeah. I mean,
what were your highlights from that time in the band then?
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment to Protein Plus Meal Plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/Pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
Hey folks, Stefan Shirazi and Renee Richardson here from the Metallica Report.
And we are proud members of the Pantheon podcast family, where the best of music and podcasts unite.
We've got something pretty cool for you. We're giving away an exclusive Metallica merch package worth over $250.
That's a whole lot of scary guys, skulls, M72, and other sought-after Metallica swag. And we've made it easy for you to win. Follow and share the Metallica Report, and you're in the game. Go to pantheonpodcast.com/Metallica, enter your email, and hit that button to be entered to win.
And just like that, you're eligible for our monthly exclusive Metallica merch package.
And guess what, rockers? You can enter every month. So just do it. And while we love our global brothers and sisters, the lawyers won't let us ship outside the US.
Glastonbury. We played Glastonbury in, I think it was 82. There was only one stage, just the pyramid stage. And Van Morrison was on with us. And that was amazing. We went on last, and I can remember it was really cold, and they were using dry ice, and my feet were freezing. That's about the main thing I can remember for that. We did Reading. Oh, I know. Yeah, we did Reading that year as well. That was great. A couple of very very crazy trips in Europe. We supported Nils Lofgren in Germany, which was a great tour. Yeah, those they were exciting times. You know, the band was on fire. Yeah. We got the tag of being one of the best live bands in the UK, and we really worked. I mean, it was a machine. It was this powerful machine that when we hit that stage for like 90 minutes, it was just in your face. And it was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant.
And that's quite interesting as a contrast as well, because like I said, everybody knows Every Day Hurts because it was the big single. But it was almost a weight around the band's neck in a way, wasn't it? Because Sad Cafe were a rock group. I mean, My Oh My and Black Rose and things like that. They're really upbeat and rocking songs, but kind of everyone knows Every Day Hurts. So was that a kind of a stone around the band's neck?
Well, I mean, we always get asked that. I think you've got to take success how it comes. So if it was Every Day Hurts, you've got to take that. You can't turn around and say, no, we don't want that, because because people love that song. That song came at a time when punk was really big. Yes, and it was needed, because you got all those young girls at university in their little dorms. You got all these young couples meeting, and they wanted an anthem to latch onto. And Every Day Hurts was that anthem, and still is. You know, people still come up and tell you where they were when they first heard it, which is amazing. But you know, the like you say, the band had the other catalogue was great songs, and that's what we're finding. People still love Black Rose and My Oh My and La Di Da, which is surprising that it was like a minor hit in America, and we've introduced it back into the set, and people are really loving it.
Good.
You know, it's great.
Fantastic. And I've got to ask you as well about Paul Young. I mean, I had Paul Carrack on the show as well recently, and just nice to hear about him. So what was it like working with Paul? What was he like in the studio? Obviously, he had a great voice, but just talk a bit about Paul.
How long have we got? Paul was a great character. He was larger than life. His voice was sensational. I mean, I interviewed Paul Carrack about him, and they both got the gig with Mike and the Mechanics at the same time, you know, because Mike Rutherford couldn't choose between the two of them. So he kept them both. And Carrack had the utmost respect for Youngie because Paul could take an audience by the throat and just rock them. He was a real sort of tough. He liked things right. He got annoyed when they weren't, but He was a pleasure to work with. I mean, you just knew that when Youngie hit the stage, you were off. And I did loads of stuff. When I was producing, I used Paul on loads of things, and he'd come in and he'd be the ultimate professional and do stuff. And you'd think, how on earth is he coming up with that? But he did. And it was a massive shock. You know, I mean, he was never really ill. He was a titan, you know, he was a big guy, and so it really hit hard to everybody who knew him that it was completely completely out of the blue.
Yeah.
When it happened. I mean, the story, a good friend of mine, a guy called Alistair Gordon, who's a producer and writer, had been working with Paul on a solo album because Carrick had done one and all the others were doing things. And Paul wanted to write a solo album. And Alistair knew that in the studio in Paul's house, there were all these songs on tapes that were, you know, great songs. But he couldn't really push it because obviously what had happened. So he left it. And about 7 or 8 years later, Paul's wife, Pat, turned up on his doorstep with a cardboard box and just said, full of tapes. And just said to Alistair, can you do anything with these? And so he took them to this studio in Gothenburg where he was working. And they meticulously, that's a word, isn't it? They stripped all the music off of these tapes, just kept Paul's voice. Now, some of them were finished, but some of them were like ideas. And Youngie was always putting ideas down and never finishing them off. So Alistair very cleverly made songs, complete songs from these bits that Paul had put down. And then Dave Irving, the drummer at the time, he called Dave up and Dave went over and put all the drum tracks down. And then the following week, I went over to Gothenburg and played bass on them. And it was uncanny because you were sitting there 9 years after Paul had gone and his voice was like, oh my God, when it first started, it was eerie. And it probably took me about a day to get used to what was going on. But then we did this album. It's called Chronicles. And there's some great songs on it. You've got people like Mike Rutherford played on it. Paul Carrick sang on it. Graham Gouldman, Eric Stewart. Wow. And it is a stunning piece of work that I think is a great tribute. And we do one of his songs, actually. It's called House of Many Nations, and we do that in our set as a tribute to him. It's a great album.
Definitely. And speaking about being live, I mean, you said there you've done a few dates already this year. You've got dates all the way through 2023. I mean, you've got some nice festivals lined up, you've got some other gigs lined up as well. So is it nice to be back on the road and playing these songs still?
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, if you're a musician, you want to play, don't you? I think we mentioned it before that obviously people have passed, you know, Paul died, Victor died, John Stimson died, and other people have moved on. They've retired. Dave Irving retired recently. Ian Wilson retired. Health issues, you know, we all get health issues, and the traveling is cruel at times. So what I've done is I decided I'm not going to let this rest. So I'm now captain of the ship and I've put together an amazing band of musicians who are all stunning players in their own right. The guitar player, a guy called Dave Day, works with Leo Sayer when he's over. Matt Steele, the keyboard player, is with the Brand New Heavies. And we've got a great drummer, Steve Gibson, plays with a lot of the big blues people. Neil Shaw Hume, the sax player, is a fantastic player, multi-instrumentalist, you know. And then the lead singer, now Barry James Thomas, he's got a great story because when Paul was growing up, his best pal was a guy called Dougie Thomas. And Dougie Thomas in Manchester, he became Dougie James, and he had a band called the Dougie James Soul Train. Now, we all played in Dougie James's band. Paul did, I did, guys from 10cc did. Dougie was one of those guys that he attracted the great players. Yeah. And Barry was his younger brother. So he grew up alongside Paul. And on stage he says, I remember he was Uncle Paul and Auntie Pat. So he goes right back to when they first did Thanks to Ra. And he said, Paul brought this album round for his brother, who wasn't particularly bothered about listening to it, but Barry did. And Barry learnt all the songs. So it's a dream come true for Barry now to actually be singing with the band.
Phenomenal.
And we've also got a fantastic guy who represents us, a guy called Peter Barton.
Yes.
And he's really got it. He understands the band. He knows where we should play and he knows where we shouldn't play. And, you know, it's quite frustrating at times because you think, oh, I'd love to play that place. And he goes, no, don't bother about that. No, I'll find you a better place than that. And but he's wonderful. You know, like I say, he gets it. He gets us. And so it's a pleasure. And he's putting, like you say, he's putting some really nice gigs in for us. And we've just recently, we are going to do new material. Oh. I bet that was one of your questions, wasn't it? Yeah. but we've decided, you know, that, yes, we want to move this on. We're not going to still go backwards. We're going forwards. And the guys are all, you know, those sort of people. And two conversations that I've had with people that I know, and I can tell you this because I'm sure they won't be upset. I mean, we haven't really finalized it, but I sent a message to Graham Gouldman, who I've known for years. Graham Gouldman was responsible for me getting my Music Man bass because I met Graham at Strawberry and he said to me, I've got this guitar that you will love. You can't have it, but I'll lend it to you. And you can use it to sessions. You can use it on gigs. And I tell you now, you'll want one. And it was a Music Man Stingray. And I did. I went out and bought one brand new in 1980. And I still use it today.
Wow.
And it's an amazing, amazing guitar. But so I contacted Graham and said, we're back. We're out there doing it. And we want to do some recordings. If you don't ask, you don't get. Do you have anything that you think might suit us? And he straight away replied and he said, fantastic news. What are you looking for? And I said, well, we don't want a ballad because don't want to go down that route again. But I said, how about something a bit like Black Rose and La-Di-Da? 10 minutes later, he sent me a song.
Wow.
So that is now, we're starting working on that. And another one of my interviewees, Russ Ballard, who's a lovely, lovely guy. It was a great interview I did with him. I spoke to him and he's sorting us a song out as well. So, you know, we are looking, I think, at surprising quite a few people.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as I say, we're not, yes, of course we're looking backwards to do the back catalog. We've got to, but we're not only doing that. We're now going forward. There is a new life in Sad Cafe, which I think will surprise people. And people who've been coming to the shows, and we got some wonderful comments from people on the show, which is amazing.
Yes.
You know, that people are accepting it. And the fact that, okay, I'm the only person who goes back 40-odd years with them, but they want to hear the music.
Yeah.
You know, it's important to them. You know, they want to sit there and relive Black Rose. They want to sit there and relive Everyday Hurts. And we're giving them that.
Wonderful. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you, Des. As you said, there's loads of dates on the road that Sad Cafe are out and about. So what's the best way of keeping in touch and finding out where you're going to be and what you're doing?
Well, our Facebook page is Sad Cafe Now. And we've got a website, which is sadcafe.co.uk. And say hello to us if you... You know, if you contact us, say hello. If you come to one of the gigs, come and say hello. We'll always come out at the end, so come and say hello.
And a big thanks to the wonderful Des Tong for sharing his stories there. If you get a chance, check out the band On The Road. It'll be a night of top songs and you'll probably recognise more than you'd expect. Check out Sad Cafe Now on Facebook and social media for all the latest details. Right, it's the time of the show for this week's top five, and I'm going to give you my favourite five songs from Sad Cafe, of course. But a big shout out to everyone who commented and got in touch with their favourite songs from the Hollies last week. Now, if you haven't listened to episode 83 yet with the brilliant Alan Clark, lead singer and Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, of course, then do check it out now. It's got so much love, and to be honest, I was a bit overwhelmed with all the lovely comments that came in. But for the song choices, I went with Long Call Woman at number one, Bus Stop at two, Just One Look at three, He Ain't Heavy, He's My Brother at four, and The Great Carrie Ann at five. Some of the comments then. Christian Swain, the rock and roll archaeologist, he simply replied with, The Air That I Breathe? Lots of question marks. Okay, it's a great song, but not quite in my top five, I'm afraid. Gene O'Donnell said, love your choices. I'd have Carousel in there. Jeff and Paula Czekolinski had a few of the same as me, but added Cable Car and You Know the Score. Michelle Verhoes had Just One Look as his number one, with the great Jennifer Eccles also making his five. Dory Jennings had My Back Pages and Look Through Any Window topping her list of five. And Carousel also made her list. Simon Galloway also went with a couple of mine, but added The Clown and King Midas in Reverse on there. Interesting song. Maurice Borshtinsky, he said, some good picks, but I got to show some love for Sorry Suzanne. Top tune indeed. And Julio Cesar Espirito Santo de Oliveira added The Day That Curly Billy Shot Down Crazy Sam McGee. What a great song title. Huge thanks to everyone that joined in this week. I love to see what you think of these bands and their catalogues and all that sort of stuff too. It's a lot of fun. Right, so let's see what you make of this one this week then. My favourite five songs from Sad Cafe. At five is a song with a great intro. It's got a deeper vibe to it and a cracking solo too. It appears on their big album, Facades. At number five is Crazy Oyster. The world is spinning like a wheel of fortune. The kings are neither up nor down. We follow blindly like a handful. And number four is their big hit. It's as sing-along gets. And number four is Everyday Hurts. At number three is another from the Facades album, the opener in fact. It's a great rocking upbeat tune with a cool guitar riff and some funky backing vocals too. And number three is Take Me to the Future. Number two is a fairly chilled song until the last few minutes when it gets heavy, and it's the reason it features so highly on my list. That last 2 minutes, fantastic. And number two is Let Love Speak for Itself. And at number one for me is one off their debut album, Thanks Ta-Ra. Big recognisable intro, big stompy chorus, much love. My favourite song from Sad Cafe is Black Rose. So there you go, my top five songs from Sad Cafe. As always, I'd love to hear what you think. What's your favourite track of theirs? Message me on the social media platforms or email me vintagerockpod@gmail.com, and I'll give you a mention on next week's show. And remember, check out Facebook, Twitter, Instagram and YouTube for all the Vintage Rock Pod latest. Well, that's it for me and this week's big interview show. Next week's is another cracker with a fantastic lead singer of a rock and roll band from America. Thanks again for listening to this one, though. Make sure you subscribe to Vintage Rock Pod on your podcast app so you get all the episodes that are released daily, remember. So I will be back tomorrow with another This Day Rocks. But until then, take care.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.